Mark Sigmund, are you ready?
Sure am, Gary.
Mike Vito, you ready?
Yes, sir, Gary.
Start us up.
Call in now to be heard live on the Clean and Sober Radio Show at 888-329-3306. That's 888-329-3306.
Good afternoon and welcome to Clean and Sober Radio out of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. My name is Gary Hendler. My co-host Mark Sigmund is sitting next to me. We have a great show today. We have Brian yes. Cuban is going to be our guest and a lot to talk about with Brian. But before we get to Brian, we have a little bit of housekeeping we need to get to. First of all, let's talk about the radio stations that we're on now.
So, very good news, Gary.
It is good news. So in Philadelphia, we are on WWDB AM 860 right now live. We're also simulcast on 97.5 FM High Def 2. Then Saturday evening in Southern Florida at 8 o'clock, we're on WWNN AM 1470. We're also on 95.3 FM and 96.9 FM. And then starting next week, we are also going to be in Tampa, Florida, on WHFS AM 1010. That's a big talk, 50,000 watt. And also, we're in Las Vegas, Nevada, on WDWN AM 720.
Wow, we're getting the message out there, Gary. It's getting bigger and bigger.
It's getting bigger and bigger.
Which is awesome.
It's great, right?
Yes.
You and I are helping more and more people.
Yes, and we'll even be able to get into some gambling addiction and things like that.
Probably.
With Vegas coming on board.
Probably. The district attorney of Delaware County, which for our viewers and listeners are not around here, it's right outside of Philadelphia, a large county. And the district attorney, Jack Stolzheimer, who gets recovery, he gets this whole thing. He's great. And they're having, for people in the area, they're having next Tuesday, the 24th, a Narcan giveaway at 69th Street Terminal. So the district attorney's office is going to be giving out for free Narcan. And I'm sure most people who are listening or watching us know that Narcan can stop an opioid overdose.
Yeah, everybody should have Narcan. keep it on you, especially if you have kids, if you have teenagers. It saves so many lives each year.
Right. And you know, the Good Samaritan Act or law in Pennsylvania, yep. at least, if you're with somebody and they start to overdose, you know, you call the cops, call 911, or use this. You can't get in any trouble unless you're the one that's sold it to the person or administered it to them.
Yeah, it's important to know that because I know people were worried about that. And again, you can't get any legal issues because you saved somebody using Narcan. And it's not going to hurt somebody if they're apparently not having an overdose.
Exactly.
That's important to remember.
And this is what Narcan looks like. And the way that it is administered is, if somebody is going overdose and you believe they're overdosing, you get them on their side.
Yes.
You get them on their side. You start yelling their name. If there's no response, you put their head back and you give them one shot in the nostril. Yeah. And don't you also hit them on their chest?
Yeah. So you would do a sternum rub just to check, you know, if they're aware. I believe you can actually give it to them when they're on their back and then turn them on their side.
Okay.
And you know, again, sometimes it'll take multiple doses, but it would. So the important thing is to call 911 very quickly.
Right. Is this one dose in here or is it two? You know,
it's one dose.
One dose. One
yeah.
shot. It doesn't matter which nostril.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. I mean, I don't know if there's two. I've never actually squirted one, so I don't know if there's two. You know, if you could spray it twice and go in each nostril, but I heard you just use one nostril is fine.
Good. Okay, yeah. I also want to talk about a product that that Mark and I are backing, not financially, but advertising.
Yes.
And it's called Safe RX. This is what it looks like. This is in your medicine cabinet. And look, this is for if you have elderly parents in the house, grandparents or young kids. You don't want them to get the pills that are in here. And as we say each week, this isn't for people like Mark and me and probably Brian when we get him on the line here, because we would take the medicine cabinet off the wall to get our dope.
Exactly.
So this is just this is one layer. Put it in, it locks, and you can't open it. It's a good product. Check it out, saferx.com. All
yeah,
right?
Yeah, and we talk about it every week about how kids get in those medicine cabinets, and that's how sometimes they get started in this whole nightmare.
Yeah. Hey, let's bring Mark Cuban on. Let's bring Brian Cuban on. Brian.
Hey, Brian.
Well, yeah, Mark's not coming on. He's not here.
Hey, Brian. Brian, first of all, I have to apologize to you, okay? And when I did the promo last night, and, you know, it shouldn't have said at the end, look, everybody knows you're Mark's brother, okay? So let's get that out of the way. But it really should have said, in your own right, you have accomplished an incredible amount of good work since you've been sober. And so my Mark here and I just want to say, you know, we totally respect you for all the work that you do in our community. So welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. Thanks. I was listening to your dialogue on Narcan, and this is one of the I don't know what the law is in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Drug induced overdoses when someone gives someone the drugs, but this is what makes that those laws problematic. If you give someone some heroin or opioids and that person overdoses, and you could be prosecuted for giving him those drugs, what are you going to do, right? Are you going to revive the guy, or are you going to hit the road?
Probably going to hit the road.
So this is where these kind of laws are problematic. I just wanted to jump in on that, again, with the proviso that I have no idea what the law is in Pennsylvania.
Well, let me just give a little background on you, my friend. So Brian Cuban is an American attorney, author, speaker, activist. You're an authority on male eating disorders, drug addiction, drug rehabilitation and alcoholism. So you know the whole deal, and let's jump back. You grew up in outside of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Is that correct?
Correct. Little suburb called Mount Lebanon, about 9 miles south of Pittsburgh.
Right. Two brothers.
My brother Mark, and I have a younger brother Jeff.
Right. Let's do this before we even start. Look, I'm sure that you get this all day long. You're the brother of Mark, okay? Let's get past that. Everybody who's watching, everybody who's listening, let's just get past it. This guy, Brian Cuban, on his own is a special dude. So let's not even talk about it. You love your brother. And
yeah, you can talk about it. It's part of my story.
Okay,
it's a part of it. He saved my life.
I know he did. We'll get into life. That. I just didn't know how, you know, look. To have a famous brother or sister or any kind of sibling or parent, you know, it's good in a lot of ways, and it's a hassle in a lot of other ways. I'm assuming
back,
I don't
back
have
in the
that.
Day, back well, before recovery, it got me lots of good drugs.
Yeah, I bet it did. I bet it did. So, okay, so you grew up outside of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Were you a good kid? Tell me about your childhood.
Yeah, I was a heavy kid. I was a shy kid, very withdrawn, and unfortunately, I was bullied severely and fat shamed, and it all accumulated in a physical assault because some kids decided that this pair of shiny gold bell bottom disco pants that my brother and Mark had given me just didn't fit me all that well. So they physically assaulted me and tore the pants off me, ripped them into shreds, and threw them in a busy street a mile from my house. It was pretty traumatic.
Well, you never
and
forget
I also.
That.
No, you don't. Yeah. It was very traumatic. And I was also fat shamed by my mom severely, though I don't blame my mother for anything that happened to me. Parents do not cause addiction. Parents do not cause eating disorders. There's a difference between cause and correlation, right?
Yeah.
So things that happen at home can correlate with mental health issues, but it doesn't happen to everyone. That's why it's correlation. So all of these things really came together into the mix, into the boiling pot, to manifest as an eating disorder as a freshman at Penn State, bulimia, and also exercise bulimia, which is obsessive compulsive exercise for the primary purpose of offsetting calories. Then I began drinking heavily, and before going into my sophomore year, I certainly would have been classified as a quote-unquote alcoholic. drinking, you know, every night, getting drunk every night, going into the alleys of the Penn State bars.
Yeah.
And I'm sure a lot of your listeners went to Penn State.
So
the alleys back there where the bars were, and drinking a bottle of tequila from the state store, and just so I could get drunk, to go up and get drunker in the hopes that I would not be the shy person.
Brian, do you think your addictions were environmental or genetic?
I mean, again, you talk about cause and correlation.
Yeah.
I personally don't believe any quote unquote addiction is one or the other. It's a combination. If we're going to talk genetics, I have no known history of alcoholism or addiction in my family.
Yeah, I don't either. So, it's weird.
I would have to say, if we're just going to look at the big picture, that mine were probably more related to trauma than genetics.
Right. It does definitely sounds that way. So when you were going through this trauma, I guess in I don't know if it's elementary, but junior high school,
yes.
did you get any support from anybody in your family?
I didn't tell anyone in my family. You have to remember, this was the 1970s.
Yeah.
I'm a boomer. So this is a time when these kind of things were not understood. Bullying, you know, you stood up to bullies, right?
Yeah,
you saw the little pictures in the back of comic books where the bully kicking sand in your face, and then you take this food and suddenly you're Samson, right?
Yeah,
or whatever. And so these were the ways we thought of bullies. It was very shameful to not to be able to stand up to yourself.
Right.
And we certainly weren't talking about depression or difficulties with your mother or anything like that. It just wasn't conversations that were taking place in those days.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, the therapy in the late 60s, early 70s, you didn't talk about it. It was shameful.
Yeah, it's a different ballgame. Yeah.
It's right more
these days. Yes, it's definitely talked about. I mean, I even remember in the 80s it being like that, where it wasn't talked about. And, you know, when you got that kind of shame, or you're getting shamed, you want to close up, you want to isolate. It's really, really difficult. I think a lot of us have been through that, Brian.
You know,
sure, of course. And and in those days, I mean, you're not going to, there were no anti-bullying policies at schools or anything like that. And my mom struggled with her own mental health issues.
Mm-hmm.
And that was at a time where a woman struggling with mental health issues, if you talked about it, you could be put in asylum.
Yeah, that's right.
It just wasn't, it was, all of these things were viewed as contagious. You just kept it to yourself.
You know, when we think about it, we've come sort of a long way in the last 30 years. Not, we haven't come as far as we should, but things have changed for the better.
Yeah, I've been surprised. My son's 10,
yeah,
and there's all kinds of things on anti-bullying in the schools and everything like that. I mean, it's definitely refreshing.
You know, I was not bullied because I was such a bad... all kidding aside.
Ever?
You know why I wasn't bullied? Because I was friends with the goody-goody two-shoes and the baddest kids in school. Okay?
Yeah.
I knew how to cover myself. You know, it was... but, you know, bullying is a horrible, horrible thing. I'll tell you one thing, Mark. And Brian, when I say Mark, I'm talking about Mark Sigmund
okay.
right here.
Okay.
Not your brother.
I'm not making a mistake
time.
Here.
You do that one more time.
And your brother's not sitting here. I never bullied anybody. I always felt bad for the person that was bullied. I really did.
And
I have an I have an interesting anecdote to that.
Yeah.
I became in college, my freshman year at Penn State, I became a horrendous bully.
Really?
I bullied my college roommate mercilessly.
Mm-hmm.
I viewed that as it's because I saw the bullies who did the things to me as the popular kids, the prom kings, the prom queens who were getting to all the parties
right.
and getting their first kiss, their first date, holding hands with the girls in the hallway between the lockers. So I thought to myself, and I'm remembering back many decades, if I be like that, I will be popular like them. And I just was merciless until his brother, who was huge, came up to campus, pulled me aside and said, if you bother my brother again, I'm going to beat your ass. I never bothered that kid again.
Isn't it interesting? It just, the psychology of all this is so interesting. Yeah, and what we remember
oh,
from
yeah.
decades ago,
yeah,
You know, that's the interesting part. Hey, Brian, we have to take our first break. We don't want you to go anywhere. You have the whole hour with us until you get sick of us. All right.
I'm right here.
All right, my man. All right, we're talking to Brian Cuban. We are watching. You're listening. Whatever you're doing. In Pennsylvania, in Florida, in
Vegas,
in Nevada, Clean and Sober Radio, and we'll be right back.
If you're struggling with alcohol or drugs, Recovery Centers of America can help. RCA's local inpatient and outpatient programs are founded on science and delivered with heart from an expert caring team who will inspire and guide you every step of the way. Call 1-888-RECOVERY now to speak with a treatment advisor. At RCA, you'll be in a community that builds connections and fosters support from peers and RCA's team of medical professionals and recovery support specialists. At RCA's state-of-the-art campuses in Devon, PA, and Mays Landing, New Jersey, they tailor your treatment to you and also offer specialized programs for patients with history of trauma, for patients who have achieved recovery but are experiencing a relapse, for young adults, adults 50 years and older, a confidential program for first responders and military, and a faith-based program. RCA answers the phone and accepts patients 24/7. And because it's local and in-network with insurance providers, treatment is affordable and accessible. Don't wait. Call 1-888-RECOVERY. Recovery today.
Huntington Creek Recovery Center is Eastern Pennsylvania's premier provider of transformative care for individuals whose lives have been impacted by addiction. Our 40-acre campus offers a tranquil, recovery-focused environment. We specialize in evidence-based care that addresses the effects of trauma and offer a unique program specifically for adolescent males. Huntington Creek Recovery Center can help you achieve lasting sobriety. Call us today at 844-948-2320.
Don't let addiction rob you of one more day. Pocono Mountain Recovery Center offers comprehensive addiction treatment for adults. Depending on your unique needs, your care at Pocono Mountain may include detox, residential treatment, and an array of outpatient options. We also offer transitional living support and transportation for outpatient participants. Pocono Mountain is in network with most major insurance plans. Start your recovery journey at Pocono Mountain Recovery Center. To learn more, call 877-596-0223.
Hi, Grandma. Can Nina come over for dinner?
Sure. I've been meaning to ask you, what would happen if someone offered you a drink?
Grandma!
If anyone ever does, I want you to say, no, I have too much respect for my family and I don't want to get in trouble.
I promise, Grandma.
They really do hear you. For tips on what to say, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov. That's underagedrinking.samhsa.gov. This message brought to you by SAMHSA and this station.
Hi, this is Rick Roberts from the group Firefall, and I listen to Clean and Sober Radio on 860.
Hi, this is Judy Collins, and I listen to Clean and Sober Radio.
You're knocking at my cellar door. I love you, baby. Can I have some more? Ooh, the damage done.
Right, we're back. We are back. Clean and Sober Radio out of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. We are honored to have Brian Cuban with us.
Yes, yes, we are.
Because he is one of us.
Yes, and I wanted to mention Merritt Hartblay. We were talking about overdoses earlier,
yeah.
And Merritt Hartblay wrote in, there's a rally in D.C. next Friday in front of the Chinese embassy, and basically there's a ton of fentanyl coming from China right now. Some people say there's factories over there, and so this is a rally to bring awareness to what a problem it is. So if you're around D.C. or if you can travel there next Friday, do it. Go in front of the Chinese embassy and let's bring some awareness to this issue.
That's good. Murray, thanks for alerting us to that. Let's just take a quick, little attendance here. Mark Willig, Frank DeSantis is watching. Michael Shoemaker from Tennessee is watching. Michael Vietz. Stephanie DePaul. Donnie Charles.
My neighbor. Hart.
He's saying he's tuning in during his workout, and he's showing us his big muscles.
I saw him on the way.
I wonder if he was a bully.
He was, he's a huge guy. He was a former professional wrestler,
yeah.
And he's such an awesome dude.
Let me tell you something. Can I tell you something? Brian Cuban and I could take him in a fight right now.
I don't think you, me, Brad, and Brian Cuban together, along with Mike, can take Donnie in a fight.
Okay, well, we'll leave him at that. Lori Han Maslin's watching. Your beautiful wife, Andrea Diaz.
Ah, my beautiful wife. Hello, Andrea.
Phil Friedman from Florida is watching. All right, let's get back to Brian, because that's where we want to go with this. So, Brian, so you had a rough go of it, high school, junior high, college, got crazy with the drugs. You graduated, apparently. You went to law school.
Yes, I went to Pitt Law, and yeah. It's funny, I didn't go to Pitt Law because I wanted to be a lawyer. I went to Pitt Law because I knew I could spend 3 years drinking, running, and engaging in the exact same behaviors that I did at Penn State that were kind of my survival behaviors, because
right.
I was a severe alcoholic at that point. So I went into, I started my first year at Pitt Law as a severe alcoholic, as somebody suffering with dealing with bulimia as well. And it wasn't quite the recipe for, you might imagine I wasn't law review. I mean, I went to class drunk, just like at Penn State. I went to class drunk. I showed up at classes hungover, drunk. I drank at night, drank alone. And I was pretty close to the bottom of my class, but I did manage to graduate.
Well, you're smarter than I am, because I was stoned on Quaaludes in law school in Florida. And then law school in Spokane, Washington, and thrown out of both of them. You got your degree,
you know,
though. Huh?
You know, it's funny. Years later, after I graduated, I ran into this this girl, a lawyer, who was a year ahead of me, and we were talking about the drug scene while I was in law school.
Yeah.
And she's talking about all these people doing cocaine and this and that. I'm like, what? I never saw any of that. I'm glad I didn't. But I would see it after I graduated, and that would be a problem.
You know, our Brian, our viewers and listeners know obviously what drug and alcohol addiction is. Can you tell our viewing and listening audience what bulimia is and how it manifests itself?
Well, there are different types. Traditional bulimia is binging and purging. Mm-hmm. When you eat, you binge food and then you regurgitate it, you vomit it. Afterwards, that's bulimia. That is an eating disorder. It affects a lot of people, men and women. Eating disorders actually have the highest mortality rate of any psychological illness. More people die from eating disorders than any other DSM-5 diagnosis, although opioid use disorder may be closing in or maybe past that recently. But exercise bulimia is obsessive compulsive exercise to offset calories. I was running up to 20 miles a day. And a lot of this stemmed from my body image issues, from fat shamed and from being bullied. Again, that's cause and correlation you have to look at. But I think that's where a lot of that stemmed from.
And that condition is called body dysmorphic disorder, correct?
That's right. I dealt with body dysmorphic disorder, body dysmorphia most of my adult life. And what that is when you take a small or even non-existent perceived defect in your body, when you look in the mirror or whatever in your reflection, and you exaggerate it in your mind to the point where it affects your ability to function, quote unquote, normally in life. You don't leave the house. You get hundreds of thousands of dollars in plastic surgery.
Yeah.
You start using drugs. There's a high correlation between substance use disorder and body dysmorphic disorder or alcohol use disorder. You abuse steroids, which I've done, anabolic steroids. I almost lost my leg from using a dirty needle. Yeah. It has a very high suicide rate. And it's kind of stereotyped as a woman's disorder, but it affects men and women equally.
Right. You normally think of
it as about 1% of the population.
Yeah. I mean, I think the population would think, yeah, that's a ladies' problem. But no, it's a male problem also.
It's a both problem, and male, because people think of it as kind of, they confuse it with eating disorders, and which it's not, and think of it as a female disorder. Men tend to be much more shameful about it,
now
as they are for eating disorders.
Brian, I'm assuming you graduated Pitt Law in the early 80s, correct? No. I mean Penn State early 80s.
83.
83. How about Pit Law, 86?
86, I went straight through.
So you did it in 3 years?
Yeah, that's how you do law school, yeah.
Well, I know that, but I know a lot of people that did it in 6 years.
No, I managed to get out in three. I wasn't a good student, but I made it through.
But it doesn't matter if you graduated in the first or the 300th, right?
Well, no, it does. From the standpoint of getting a job, it matters.
It doesn't really.
There was no one beating down my door to hire me.
All right, so you graduate from Pitt, and it appears that you kept having your issues for another at least 10 years, right?
Well, in the summer of 87, I discovered in a bar in Dallas, Texas, at a hotel, I discovered that one thing that for the first time in my life allowed me to look in the mirror at myself and not hate myself, to actually love myself. For all of my life, I had hated myself.
What was that?
And that was, as you might guess, cocaine.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And I did my first line of cocaine in that bathroom, and cocaine and alcohol absolutely took over my life. Alcohol already had, but it was Katie bar the door. I failed the Texas bar exam 2.5 times.
Yeah.
Each time was because I was dealing with drug and alcohol addiction. I was doing cocaine in the federal courthouse, the state courthouse. I was going to hearings under the influence of cocaine. And so all of my money, free money, was being spent on cocaine. And it really, because it was one of those things, right? It's fun till it's not. And at
of
the
course.
Beginning,
yeah.
It was allowing me to love myself. And mm-hmm. the feeling of finally loving myself was more powerful than anything. And mm-hmm. I had to have, just like addiction, I had to have that again and again and again.
You know, our substances might be different, but the MO on all this is really the same, you know.
Sure.
It's
And, I mean, it got really weird and strange. In 2006, yeah, you've heard this story. Do you want me to tell the cocaine Mavericks ticket story?
Yeah, sure.
So the Mavericks went to the NBA championship for the first time in 2006, and my brother owning the team, you might imagine I was going to get some pretty good seats. So I also had the opportunity to get a couple of tickets for friends. I called up my brother. He said, "Sure, come on over and get them." And I didn't give them to my friend. I didn't give them to my friends, and no, I didn't sell them on eBay. I traded them to my cocaine dealer for $1,000 in cocaine.
Yeah.
So my dealer shows up at my house. I give him the tickets. He gives me this giant Ziploc baggie of blow. I go running upstairs to my home office. I dump it out on the desk, looking out like I'm Scarface, ready to bury my face in it,
right.
Bury my nose in it.
Yeah.
And I line it out, roll up the dollar bill. Our cocaine users a funny bunch, especially in pandemic times, right? You'll use the hand sanitizer, wash your hands. You'll roll up a dollar. You'll shove a dollar bill up your nose that's been used by God knows who. And just shove it up your nose. But cocaine at that point, this was 2006, had long stopped giving me that I love myself feeling.
Yeah.
Now it was just chasing it. And it was never maybe you have a problem, Brian. It was maybe I need to switch out the Grey Goose to the Jack Daniels. Maybe I need to switch dealers. And I had also become very paranoid. So thinking I hear the cops outside, I put the cocaine back in the Ziploc baggie, drive to a Home Depot, guys, and I buy electrical faceplates, a drill, and a saw. I go back to my house, and I go to the drywall in the closets upstairs, and cut out these fake electrical outlets, put the cocaine in smaller Ziploc baggies, and close it up behind all of these fake electrical outlets. Like the DEA, the cops, the drug dogs have never thought of that before.
But we are a creative bunch, aren't we, Brian?
Aren't we? So I do a little bit more, and again, just pain and shame and paranoia. I go back to the electrical outlets, I take it all back out again, I put it in the Ziploc baggie, and I go to the bathroom and flush it down the toilet. Now it's $900 for the cocaine.
Did you go to the game?
No.
Of course not.
The next morning comes, yeah. I wake up, and as so often happens, the negative event gets in the rearview mirror. Did I flush all my cocaine down the toilet?
Yeah.
What a moron! There's another game tonight. I call up my brother again. I get two more tickets. I call up my drug dealer. He shows up at my house. Dude, you did all that last night? I don't want to tell him I flushed it down
the toilet
like an idiot.
Yeah.
I said, yes, I did it all. Give me more. Okay, here you go. Back up to my home office, dump it out on the desk again, rinse, wash, repeat, do some more, hide it again, hide it behind all the electrical outlets again. An hour later, go back to those same outlets, all paranoid again, go back to that same bathroom, that same toilet, drop to my knees, guys, like I'd done so many times, praying, hoping for someone or something to take away the pain and shame of my addiction, and flushed it down the toilet again. They say when Dallas flushes, it runs downhill to Houston. So some people in Houston might have had a little off in their step those nights. But the insanity of addiction, right?
Yeah. It's a total insanity.
Over and over.
Yeah.
The same way and expecting a different result.
That's exactly right.
Insane.
Hey, Bri, we have to take another break. You hang with us?
Sure.
Because we want to get into your books and everything else, okay?
Sure thing.
All right, beautiful. We're talking with Brian Cuban. And you're listening to Clean and Sober Radio out of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Don't let addiction rob you of one more day. Pocono Mountain Recovery Center offers comprehensive addiction treatment for adults. Depending on your unique needs, your care at Pocono Mountain may include detox, residential treatment, and an array of outpatient options. We also offer transitional living support and transportation for outpatient participants. Pocono Mountain is in network with most major insurance plans. Start your recovery journey at Pocono Mountain Recovery Center. To learn more, call 877-596-0223.
Huntington Creek Recovery Center is Eastern Pennsylvania's premier provider of transformative care for individuals whose lives have been impacted by addiction. Our 40-acre campus offers a tranquil, recovery-focused environment. We specialize in evidence-based care that addresses the effects of trauma and offer a unique program specifically for adolescent males. Huntington Creek Recovery Center can help you achieve lasting sobriety. Call us today at 844-948-2320.
If you're struggling with alcohol or drugs, Recovery Centers of America can help. RCA's local inpatient and outpatient programs are founded on science and delivered with heart from an expert, caring team who will inspire and guide you every step of the way. Call 1-888-RECOVERY now to speak with a treatment advisor. At RCA, you'll be in a community that builds connections and fosters support from peers and RCA's team of medical professionals and recovery support specialists. At RCA's state-of-the-art campuses in Devon, PA and Mays Landing, New Jersey, they tailor your treatment to you and also offer specialized programs for patients with history of trauma, for patients who have achieved recovery but are experiencing a relapse, for young adults, adults 50 years and older, a confidential program for first responders and military, and a faith-based program. RCA answers the phone and accepts patients 24/7. And because it's local and in-network with insurance providers, treatment is affordable and accessible. Don't wait. Call 1-888-RECOVERY today.
Hi, Grandma. Can Nina come over for dinner?
Sure. I've been meaning to ask you, what would happen if someone offered you a drink?
Grandma?
If anyone ever does, I want you to say, no, I have too much respect for my family and I don't want to get in trouble.
I promise, Grandma.
They really do hear you. For tips on what to say, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov. That's underagedrinking.samhsa.gov. This message brought to you by SAMHSA and this station.
Hey, this is Seth Williams. I listen to Clean and Sober Radio here on WWDB 860 AM.
This is Dr. Joan, and you listen to Clean and Sober Radio 860 AM.
Talking with Brian Cuban. Brian, we thought that'd be very apropos to play that song with you on the air. Sort of a national anthem, you know what I mean?
Yeah. For many years it was for me.
Yeah, I bet it was. So, okay, let's talk about I guess if there was a defining moment for you, you said, I gotta get treatment. Or did somebody push you into it, or did you come to it yourself, or did
Well, I mean, it's a confluence. I mean, there were so many things that happened before that too, despite the cocaine, in 2005, I decided to end my life by suicide. Mm-hmm. And ended up my first of two trips to a psychiatric hospital. Fortunately, people intervened. A jail, I went to jail, the standard resume DWI.
Yeah.
And lost my legal career completely. And so in the in 2006, I had started dating someone, and she knew nothing about my problems. We wear these masks, right? But those masks were getting harder and harder for me to wear.
Yep.
And we started dating. She moved in with me, and she knew nothing about my issues. She didn't use drugs and was a very light drinker. She went away for the weekend. I went out to see some buddies, and the next thing I knew, it was 2 days later. Yeah. I'm in bed. She's looking down at me. She's home now from her trip. There's cocaine everywhere. Oops. There's black market Xanax that I would use because I would, as cocaine users know, you cocaine it through the night, you Xanax it through the day, right?
Yep.
Makes it kind of hard to work. But I showed up at hearings under the influence of Xanax as well. But so I'm sure she's looking down, wondering if she walked in the right house. She's a lawyer. And I'm trying to figure out what lie I can tell to explain this law and order style orgy of evidence that I might not be the person I represented myself to be. And all I could think of at the time was kind of a run home to mama. And so I told her to take me back to the psychiatric hospital, which she knew nothing about. You've been to a psychiatric hospital? Yeah, we'll talk about that later. So we're standing in the parking lot waiting for intake. And a few things occurred to me, guys. One, she was going to leave. Name's Amanda. And she didn't leave. She stood by me. And we dated for over a decade while I found recovery and rebuilt the broken trust.
She's your wife, isn't she?
And now she's my wife, and we're going on 5 years of marriage.
That's great.
And so not all relationships will survive those things, but ours was able to because she's a saint, but also because I had to do the work, right?
Yeah.
Had to do the work, not for her, not for my parents, not for my brothers. In the long term, those things may motivate the start, but in the long term, it had to be for me.
Yeah.
I thought about my father. I thought there wasn't going to be a third trip because I'd be dead. And then I thought about my dad, who was a greatest generation. He fought in Okinawa. He was a CB, the Korean War. He and his brother had a trim shop in Pittsburgh from the end of the Korean War till his brother passed away in 99. Very working class guy. I thought about something he used, and he was the middle of three boys, a middle child like me.
Mm-hmm.
I thought of something he used to say to us growing up. He'd say to Mark, Jeff, and I, guys, no matter where you go in life, no matter what happens, tell your brother you love him. Call your brother. Make sure your brother's okay. This was the relationship he had with his two brothers. And this was the gift of family he had passed down to me. Mm-hmm. And I thought about that. And I realized I was losing my family. Not losing their love, because they still love me, but I wasn't seeing my nieces and nephews. I wasn't seeing my brothers. I wasn't seeing my father. This void was forming. And that was I don't know why in that moment it was unbearable to me. And if you want to know how this gift stuck that my father passed down, all these miles from Pittsburgh and Dallas, decades later, Mark, Jeff, and I live walking distance from each other. And my father, until he passed away 3 years ago, lived across the street from me. And I mean literally across the street.
Wow.
And this was this gift of family he was giving us, which is a privilege, right?
Yeah.
Because in addiction, there are broken families, there are dysfunctional families, there are estranged families. So I feel very privileged, and I have this privilege, and I acknowledge it's a privilege. And I wasn't ready to lose my family. Why then and not in 2005 when I had a .45 automatic on my nightstand? I don't know. When I thought I was doing my family a favor in 2005 by ending my life by suicide. And so that was kind of the turning point. I don't like the term rock bottom, because I don't believe that we have to have the worst happen to recover. It should be finding it at the highest possible point.
Right.
It was my recovery tipping point. So the next day, I walk into my psychiatrist's office, who I've been seeing for 2 years, lying. Well, why would you lie to your psychiatrist? Shame knows no hourly rate. I was ashamed of everything I saw in the mirror.
Yep.
And I finally got honest with him. And he only gave me two options. In those days, you didn't have a lot of options. He said, Brian, would you consider residential treatment? And I exploded in the room. I'm not going to residential treatment. There are no lawyers in residential treatment. I said, I'm much too busy a lawyer to be in residential treatment, even though I have no cases left. I don't have a law practice, right? But there was an auto accident out there. I'm going to give that car guy my card, and I'll have a case and be a busy lawyer.
Yeah.
Then he next suggested 12-step, and I refused. I'm not going to 12-step, doctor. The 12-step room was right next door. I said, I'm not going to 12-step. I see them smoking out there. Secondhand smoke will kill you, doctor. Right? And so there's always a reason.
Yeah.
But I knew I had to do something, if not for myself, to prove to my family that I was doing something, to prove to my now wife so she wouldn't leave me. So I walked into the room to 12-step on April 8, 2007, and I sat down. And I smelled, and I was crying, and I start listening to the stories, and I start comparing stories, right? What we all do. Ooh, yeah, that's bad. Oh, dude, yeah. You should be here. You're okay. That's okay. None of these people, they don't know my problems. None of these people have traded Dallas Mavericks championship picks for cocaine. I'm special, right?
Yep.
And the kind of ego still way up there. But you know what I wanted most guys sitting in that room? And it had nothing to do with alcoholism. I had no idea what if I was or what that really meant to me at that time. Here's what I wanted sitting in those nasty hard chairs. If sitting in that chair would allow me for the first time in my life to wake up, walk to the mirror in my bathroom, birthday suit naked, look myself in the eye, and for the first time in my life, now in my 40s, for the first time in my life, guys, love myself. Without the aid of alcohol or drugs.
Yeah.
If sitting in that room would give me that moment, I would sit in that room.
Self-respect, huh, Brian?
And I sat. I wanted to love myself.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what that was without cocaine and alcohol.
Yeah.
I hated myself. And so I sat, and I sat, and I sat. And it wasn't automatic. It wasn't overnight. I did my 100 meetings in 90 days and all that stuff. And I'm still in counseling today for my body image issues.
Mm-hmm.
I see a psychiatrist. I take antidepressants. And now I have over 14 years of long-term recovery. And my path had to be abstinence. There are many paths today, right? There's harm reduction. There's smart recovery. There's refuge recovery. We can name them. Boom, 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 boom. And I am a fan of whatever gets you to a place. Not even about sobriety. Whatever gets you to a place of self-love, whatever gets you to a place of healthy family relationships, healthy work relationships, healthy sibling relationships, healthy child relationships with your whatever gets you there, that's to me is recovery. Is recovery.
I totally agree with this, and I'm going to tell you something that obviously you don't know, but you actually changed my mind about. Let me just say this. I would always say, hi, my name is Gary. I'm a drug addict and an alcoholic. You had posted something, Brian, where you said, I'm not a drug addict or an alcoholic anymore. I'm in recovery. So because of what you said, whatever day that was or how many a year ago, I always say now, hi, my name is Gary and I'm in recovery because I am not in active addiction right now.
Labels. I mean, let's put it this way, because some of your listeners, there's probably smoke coming out of their
ears. I know.
Call yourself, label yourself however you want.
Right.
Right. I don't begrudge anyone to call themselves an addict or an alcoholic.
Right.
Whatever is allowing you to find your recovery path, do that.
Yes.
I just don't feel the need to label myself. And it's funny. I was talking to someone because people get upset over that, right? They project and they think they get defensive when I'm only talking about me.
Correct.
And so someone said to me, I said, blah, blah, blah. I said, well, you must not be a real alcoholic.
Right.
And I thought about it and I said, well, isn't that the goal, right? Isn't that the goal to not be one?
Yes.
And so because people, it becomes who you are. And I don't think alcoholic has to be who I am. If you need that, do that. Great.
Right.
I judge no path. If you were on Suboxone, I judge no path. If you were on methadone, I judge no path. Just recover, however you define that. If you call yourself an addict, I judge no path. Now, as an advocate, when I'm out there advocating for recovery, that's different. Because we know from statistical data that words carry stigma. So So I will never refer to someone else, even if they're okay with it, as an addict. I will never refer to someone else as an alcoholic. I'll say they're a problem drinker, or I won't even, I'll just talk about specifically what they're doing, right?
Mm-hmm.
If they've already talked about it, because I don't want to hijack anyone's narrative either.
Listen, I couldn't agree with you more. However, whatever it takes to get you to a place of abstinence and being a productive and happy person, that's the way you should do it, whatever it is. Whatever.
Yeah, and you and I might even disagree on that, because when I say get where you are, mm-hmm. I know people who are on Suboxone and they have no intention of getting off.
Okay.
They have happy relationships with their family, with their children, with their girlfriend, and they're not looking for abstinence. Maybe one day they will. I don't judge that either, Gary.
No, Brian. When I mean abstinence, I mean illegal drugs. I don't mean.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. No, I agree with you 100%. 100%. All right. So you do a lot of speaking. I know you do a lot of speaking at law school commencements and graduations and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And you've also have published. I know there's three books. Two are out and one is coming out. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And
my first book, Shattered Image, was about. I wrote that a long time ago. That was about my struggles with body image and eating disorders.
Right.
The Addicted Lawyer is the one that is currently, that is out.
Yep.
Second book. And that is about addiction and lawyers who struggle with addiction and law students. And yes, I speak at law firms.
Yes,
and
you
law
do.
Events and all kinds of those things. And then my next book coming out in December is a complete divergence. It is a novel. It is my first novel. It is called The Ambulance Chaser.
So
it is about a Pittsburgh. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Brian. Go.
It is about a Pittsburgh lawyer. Sorry, Philly. I grew up in Pittsburgh.
All right. We don't hold that against
lawyer
you.
Who also, as you might expect, struggles with cocaine and alcohol, who was accused of the murder of a childhood classmate 30 years prior when her remains were found. And he is arrested for it, and he becomes a fugitive from justice to seek out the one person who can prove his innocence and save the life of his only son.
So all of the three books, I think the readers can extract some Brian Cuban out of both of them, correct?
Yes, there's, oh, sure. Even the ambulance chaser,
right.
There's me in it.
I know you didn't kill anybody, but a lawyer, blah, blah, blah. It's really interesting. And all of your books can be got through Amazon, I'm assuming, right?
Yes, they're all on Amazon. The Addicted Lawyer is now in pre-order. You can buy that on Amazon, as well as The Addicted Lawyer and Shattered Image.
So if somebody came to you, Brian, and said, listen, I'm in a lot of trouble. I need help. What kind of advice would you give to somebody now, knowing all that you know? And, of course, we don't know everything. None of us do. But through your experience, strength and hope, what would your advice be?
Trouble is a loaded word. They're struggling with addiction.
Yeah, addiction. Addiction.
First thing I want to know is what do the pillars of recovery look like? Tell me what your family situation looks like. Tell me what your job situation looks like. Tell me all these different things. And then I would lay out for them the resources, because it's not my place to say go to 12-step, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not my place to say go to Smart Recovery. I would lay out all the resources for them that are available, and I would ask them, which of these resources do you think is best for you and why? And we would talk about that. That includes residential treatment as well. It is not my place to shove something down someone's throat.
No.
Because here's the thing, Gary. I am not, and I consider myself informed, right?
Yeah.
But the only thing I'm an expert in is my own story. Right. I am not a PhD. I am not a doctor. I am not a counselor. The only thing I have expertise in is my journey.
Yeah.
But I can become a wingman by understanding the different resources based on the problem.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's complicated. It's I don't know what else to even say. I sometimes wonder, Brian, and Mark and I have had these discussions. Where is this all going to end or lead to addiction? But it probably will never end, will it?
No, I mean, Adam and Eve sought the apple.
Yeah, right.
I mean, the search for people are the part of the human experience is feeling pain. Part of the human experience is trauma. Part of the human experience is looking for ways not to feel those things.
Yeah.
Now, can I say how we will have evolved 500 years from now? No. But my hope is that we are able to find ways through science, through behavioral studies to steer people away and into healthy ways of dealing with these things. But I mean, really, I think, yeah, I mean, will addiction ever go away and substance use disorder? I mean, unless there's a magic pill, and you never say that there won't be, right?
Right, that's correct.
Who knows there will be 500 years from? Probably not, because people are always going to look for ways not to feel their feelings.
That's exactly
what
it is.
That's human experience.
That's exactly what it is, isn't it? Yeah, it's...
You wonder what other addictions, come out in the future, too. You know, with virtual reality.
Oh, I'm sure addiction to computer, addiction to...
Sure, you can say, what's the definition of addiction? Compulsive substance seeking in the face of known consequences. That could be known and predictable consequences, right?
Yep.
You can apply that to a lot of different behaviors. Addiction is a term of art as much as anything else. No.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you could plug anything into that, right?
Yeah, because, well, the diagnosis, the DSM-5 diagnosis, is actually substance use disorder, opioid use disorder, cocaine use disorder. So... addiction itself is more of a general term of art.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Brian, listen, we really thank you for giving us, almost an hour. You were on about, I don't know, 3 years ago? I can't remember how many years ago you were on.
Yeah, I'm mad you waited this long to ask me back.
No. And listen, so when we expand out to Vegas and Tampa next month, just so you know, Mark and I, whatever you would want us to, if there's something you wanted us to talk about, we'd be glad to do it because the audience is getting big now.
Bring me on and tell all my cocaine Vegas stories.
Absolutely.
I have a lot of them.
I know you do. Listen, just stay a friend of Clean and Sober Radio, and we'll be in touch with you. And we really appreciate you coming on today.
Yeah, thank you, Brian. Great story.
Thanks, guys. It was an honor to be on One Day at a Time.
Great. Have a great weekend, man.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, Brian. What a nice guy, huh?
Yeah, Brian Cuban.
What a nice guy. Look, he's just one of us.
He's just one of us. And, his story with the whole dual diagnosis, too, with the bulimia and body dysmorphia. And I was always shocked at the mortality rate of eating disorders. When I found that out, I was like, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah, that's number one.
Yes.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Let's go through. We got 3 minutes left. Let's go. There's a lot of people here. Kathy Wolf, Colin. Hey, Robert Brandis, Carrie Patton. Robert Brandis meant to tell you Mike Vito has a great voice. Okay, he does. Melissa Fleischer is watching. Dan Quinn. I hope we get everybody in here. Faryal Khan is watching. Hi to you. I think she's new. Ibrahim Mohammed. Hey, buddy.
From the Maldives.
You should be sleeping right now, I think. Let me see who else. Mary Clancy. Brian Jones. Not from the Rolling Stones, okay? Faryal Khan says, how are you both doing? We're doing fine. Who do you have? Do you have anybody else?
Mine went blank some reason. Yes, I couldn't figure it out. It went blank, so I can't help you there, Gary.
Okay. Listen, let's announce this again. Next Tuesday, for our listeners and viewers in the Philadelphia area, next Tuesday at 3 p.m., go to 69th Street, Upper Darby, big train terminal there, shopping area. From 3 to 7:30, you can get free Narcan.
Definitely do it. You can save some lives, and it's a great thing to have around the house. And I also wanted to mention again, there's going to be a get together in front of the Chinese embassy next Friday in Washington, D.C. To protest fentanyl and all the fentanyl coming from China. So,
yeah,
Yeah.
Oh, boy. All right. I think we had a good show today. Right?
I do. I do. Brian Cuban was awesome.
Yeah, he was. He was awesome, awesome, awesome. Okay, we have a minute left. Weekend?
So we're going up and we're going to the Poconos this weekend, which will be awesome.
Okay.
You know, maybe do a little bit of fishing. I heard it's going to rain possibly,
yeah,
but.
Maybe not. Maybe
yeah,
not.
You know, the weathermen are never right, you know.
And weather women.
And weather women.
Weather, can you say yes. that? Weather women.
Weather women.
Are never right. Sometimes right.
What are you doing?
Go down the shore tomorrow.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Go in the water, swim with some sharks.
Not really.
No.
Hey, there's the sound. Mark, great show.
Like
Brad
always.
Rich, thank you so much. Mike Vito, on top of your game, my man.
Welcome, guys. It was a good show today. I was actually a good listener. It really was.
Yeah, it was cool.
Nice. Have a good weekend, everybody.
Yeah, we hope everybody has a good, nice, safe weekend, right?
To say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves, I hope we pass the audition.